On this edition of the Scott Radley Show podcast, we are talking about how the interest rate increase that we've had is supposed to, if normal economics are in play, affect the inflation that is driving a lot of people across this country a little batty. We'll sort that out. And we are going to talk about music. There is a study that found that surgeons who listened to hard rock music as they were operating, they did the same level of work and they did it way faster. Music makes them better. Why? Well, we'll talk about that. Stay with us.
Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
Global news headline, Bank of Canada hiked interest rates to forcefully tame inflation. Yesterday we were talking that they were going to do this. Today they did. Yesterday we talked mainly about how it was going to affect you personally with your home, your mortgage, your debts, whatever else. Let's get into the broader picture. Let's bring in Marvin Ryder from the DeGroote School of Business. We always love having Marvin here to explain these concepts. Marvin, thanks for the time today.
Glad to be with you, Scott.
So inflation, I think clearly, someone can disagree with me, but I think clearly to most Canadians right now, the financial issue of most concern is inflation. How is boosting the interest rates directly going to affect that and bring that down and control this?
Right. So to answer that question, if you don't mind, let me just put it in a little context. About 6 weeks ago was the last time the Bank of Canada took a look at its prime interest rate, and they raised it a quarter of a point. And at the time they did it, they said, this is to go after inflation. And we thought, good for you. And then 2 days later, Russia invaded Ukraine. The price of a barrel of oil shot up over $100. I don't know how high it got, $120, $125. And the price of gasoline shot up, and all their good work to combat inflation went out the window. So I think this is why this time around, even though Ukraine and Russia remains a question mark on the horizon, they wanted to do it again, and this time make an even bigger statement. So it's not a quarter point increase, it's a half point increase. Now, how does raising interest rates tackle inflation? The basic thing is that they're trying to make the cost of borrowing some money just a little more expensive. And if they do that, the hope is that you and I, as consumers, will think just a little longer about spending money. Do we need to spend that money? Do we need to spend that money on that item? So maybe it's about buying a car. Maybe it's putting a deck on the house or as you suggested earlier, buying a new house. Do I really need to do that? Do I really need to get that big of something or other because the cost of borrowing is a little higher? And if we slow consumer demand, we might have a chance of bringing inflation down. I'll say it to you another way. Over the last year, we've heard a lot about what was called supply chain issues. And that makes it sound like a third party. Oh, you know, a truck was late or a boat was late. But really what's happened as we've come out of this COVID pandemic is that when we kind of got an all clear sound, you and I rushed out and started buying things at stores at a rate that manufacturers could not keep up. So when demand went up but supply was constant, guess what happened? Prices go up, and that fuels inflation. Mm. All that the Bank of Canada is trying to do is get us to think a second time, maybe a third time, is this the year that I need to buy those things? Do I have to buy that big of a thing? And if we just calm down a little in terms of our buying, we should help bring inflation back to something more like 2% rather than 5%.
All right, a terrific explanation, and I appreciate that. Now, let me follow up with why I wonder if this is a weird time for that, even though what you say makes absolute sense, obviously. We've just come through 2 years of a pandemic when people were not out necessarily spending a lot, when a lot of people tucked money away, when businesses were really suffering, many of them. Mm-hmm. Is this a time we should be telling people, even though inflation is high, don't go and spend your money? Or should we be saying, no, please prop up our businesses that have just spent 2 years suffering?
Right. So it's not an all or nothing proposition here. Yes, please go spend your money at a restaurant. Please go spend your money at a garden center. Please go spend your money. In other words, buy some things that you don't have to take out a loan for or break the bank to buy. So we want you to support the local businesses, but in a way, you know, maybe treat yourself to a nice cup of coffee or get yourself a dozen donuts this week. You're not going to go into hock to do that. You're not going to finance those with a line of credit on your house. But on other things, do you need to do that thing that is a much bigger ticket item? And that's what they're trying to rein in. It's not whether you buy a mocha frappuccino this week. That's not what's driving inflation. It's the other higher ticket items. And again, let me take the biggest of them all, housing. You and I have witnessed housing prices go up tremendously, more than 25% in 1 year. Nobody wants housing prices to fall 10, 15, 20%. That would be devastating. People who'd bought a house in the last year would suddenly see their equity wiped away. They're just going to say, well, I'm walking away from this house. If enough people walked away from the house, you'd cause a recession. So they don't want that. But what the Bank of Canada does want is a freeze in housing prices. They would like to see people slow down the buying, stop having these price wars, these bidding contests, and just bring some sanity back to that market for maybe a couple of years of just sort of frozen prices. Let's enjoy the 25% increase, but let's not add to it any. And this is the fine line they're walking. And I say that to you not because of that side of the coin, but it is very much around Russia and Ukraine. None of us knows what the end game is, and we put a fine point on that, Scott. If tomorrow somehow peace was declared, maybe Ukraine gives up some territory, Russia says, okay, we'll stop shelling you, what does the future look like? I swear to goodness that we're going to see a new iron curtain in our relations with Russia. The world isn't going to reverse those sanctions on a heartbeat. And what does that all mean economically? Think of India that has to buy grain. Can they get any from Ukraine this year? The scorched earth of Ukraine might say they can't even plant crops. We're not buying from Russia. So what does all that mean? And none of us really knows. So the other thing the Bank of Canada doesn't want to do is raise interest rates now and then in 6 weeks say, oops, we went too high, let's bring them back down. That would cause another kind of topsy-turvy in the market. So it is a tricky time for them to find that right line to walk.
Well, and one other thing I want to ask about, and that is we just had the budget last week, and Canada, we have controlled our spending to some degree, although we're still going to be running pretty relative to other years, gigantic deficits.
Yep.
And one of the things that I find always so ironic is the government says it doesn't like inflation, and yet inflation, if a thing is $1.10 versus $1, that extra, it means more tax. Inflation actually helps the government pay its bills. Does the government really want inflation to go away, or does it suddenly find itself in a pickle if it does?
Yeah, it does want it to go away in the sense that it hurts the average Canadian. It may help the government, and a great example of that is in November, Chrystia Freeland brought down an economic update in the last year. She said, my best guess is we're going to end the 2021-2022 fiscal year with a $140 billion deficit. And when they drew the line on March 31st, not quite 2 weeks ago, guess what the deficit was for the year? $114 billion. That's still an awful lot of money, but if you do the math, that's $26 billion better. That's almost 20% better than you had projected. What went on? Because of all that additional revenue that they hadn't counted on that came in because of inflation. So you're right, the government likes it, but they know that the public doesn't. And so can we get it into a reasonable range? We're not trying to drive it to zero, but we don't want it at 5. Let's get it at maybe 3. How about 3? Still a little too high, but in the right direction. So there again, they're all walking this fine line between the extremes.
It is a fascinating bit of economics to try and do that. Always appreciate the explanations, Marvin. Thank you for this.
Glad to be with you, Scott.
We do go to Marvin when we need these things explained in a way that is easy to understand for people like me and maybe somebody like you. Some of you listening are going, you know, that's so simple. Why are you spending our time? Because you know what? I really believe when I talk to people that an awful lot of people know, but they don't know. And so when we get a chance, we like to try and have it explained so we really do know. And then we can discuss these things intelligently later on as opposed to just assuming we know. Anyway, that's why we do it.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
I read a story about a study, and this one was just great. This one, I love this one. A, because it's so surprising in a certain way, and B, because who wouldn't want to work like this? It found in this study from the Heidelberg University in Germany that doctors who were operating on patients while blasting loud music like Back in Black or some other really cranking rockin' tune, they performed certain tasks up to 70% more quickly without sacrificing any accuracy. music made them do their jobs faster, more efficiently, and just as well, if not better, than what they were doing before. It is a fascinating idea that music can have this impact on us, even though music is not tactile. It's not something you can touch. It's not something you can taste. It's there, but it's not there, if you get my point, and yet it can have this amazing effect on us. I want to bring in Rachel Finnerty. She's a music therapist. For years, she's been a music therapist working with all diagnoses and age groups. She founded the first and only music therapy academy in Canada, and she is currently a PhD student at McMaster University in psychology, neuroscience, and behavior, researching music therapy for proactive wellness to manage stress and anxiety. All far too intelligent for me, so I will just bring her on so she can answer all the tough questions. Rachel, thanks for doing this today.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
So you like the idea, as a music therapist, you liking the idea of rock and roll surgeons? This sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, I think we just need to have music in everything that we do, whether it be AC/DC or Guns N' Roses. It's definitely going to make things better. Yes.
I mean, even if you wake up from your anesthetic, it's like, okay, it's going to hurt, but at least there's something there to distract you now. I mean, there's a double benefit to this, but does this, I mean, you've been in this for a long time. You've been doing this and working with music as a beneficial thing. Does this surprise you at all to hear that it has this effect of making people work better, more efficiently, and faster?
Yeah, no, it's not surprising at all. It's just wonderful to see it in print. And that's what we need in order to really advocate to be seeing more of seeing music in the healthcare field and being used by individuals at large. So it's just really wonderful to see it in print in a research study. I mean, music historically, if we go back before modern medicine, was used in all kinds of health and well-being. It was used, music was part of the rituals for health and for well-being, for mood, for elevating mood and bringing people together. And it wasn't until the dawn of modern medicine that music started to be seen in Western culture as something that is for entertainment. It doesn't have so much value beyond entertainment, but that's not the case. It has so much more to offer.
All right, let's get into this a bit, because I you mentioned mood. I don't think there's anybody that would disagree with the idea that music can alter your mood. Some people who were listening to that song we were playing for the quiz question, Another One Bites the Dust, I mean,
yeah,
just they pick them up even while they're listening to that one. So no one's going to disagree with that. But the idea that it can have a physical effect on your body and on something you're doing.
Yeah.
It's not a drug. It's not a food. It's not tangible in that way. You can't touch it. And yet we've got lots of science that says, and lots of lived experience by everybody listening who says, sure, I, you know, if I'm a jogger and I put in music, I do better. Why? What's going on in our brain, in our body? What's happening that something invisible is becoming impactful this way?
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right in saying it's invisible to our eyes, but it's tangible to our whole body and to our whole soul. And we do actively consume music. And as we do consume music, it's affecting our limbic system in the same way that the food that we like or drinking alcohol, anything that brings us pleasure and reward, that reward system, music evokes that same system in the brain. So it evokes the limbic system, which is our emotions and memory. And music also activates our motor cortex, which is why we suddenly start to find ourselves moving when we hear a strong beat in the music.
Right. So There was a study done a number of years ago that I read earlier today. I was reminded of it. I think it was in Norway, where they tested people, where they had, there was a contest to see if they could stand still while certain music played, and you were eliminated as soon as you moved in a way that people could register.
I would be an epic fail in that.
Everybody was. And again, I look at that and I go, if I specifically say I am not going to be moved by music, we still do it. If you watch people, you're tapping your toe without knowing it, or tapping your fingers or whatever else. Why? What is, again, we go back, what's happening that we don't even have a control over this?
Yeah. So music impacts the autonomic nervous system. So that's the system that responds to the environment without us thinking about it. So if we see something scary in the environment, we don't think about, okay, so now I'm going to make my heart race. Okay, go heart. And now I'm going to make my breathing speed up. Okay, go breathing. Like, we don't direct those systems that are part of our autonomic nervous system. They just respond automatically to the environment so that we can respond and so we can survive. It's a survival instinct, the autonomic nervous system. And music impacts that same system and responds to the environment. So it's responding to the music in the environment in the same way. So our body hears music or feels music in the environment, and then the heart starts to change. So the heart rate will lower, or the heart rate will start to increase. The breathing will change. The hormones that are released will increase or decrease. And I think that's a big part of what we saw in the paper with the surgeons, is the release of, or the decrease of cortisol, which is the stress hormone. And when we have less stress, then we can do our jobs better. And I think that probably was a large part of the study. And it's unfortunately they did not take cortisol measures in this study, because I think they would really find a reduction in cortisol specifically. And I can imagine that would have had a large impact on why the accuracy was maintained and there was an increase in their efficiency.
Do you believe that this would be true of all music? I mean, they're talking examples of playing AC/DC or something that's right. Just really going. But let's say I threw on, I don't know, any other kind of music. I threw on ABBA, or I threw on classical, or I threw on jazz or whatever. Would any music work?
No. So I think something that's really, really important, it's one thing that, as much as it's wonderful having these headlines about, you know, AC/DC is having this positive effect in the surgery room, it's also very misleading, because many people could very well think, oh, I need to start listening to AC/DC to be more effective. But the reality,
AC/DC did not sponsor this study, by the way, just in case you're wondering, for album sales.
But I think what's important here is that in that particular study, it was noted that the surgeons all had a preference for classic rock, which was defined by AC/DC, Sweet Child of Mine, and such. So they had a preference for classic rock music. And I would imagine, and actually there are studies that support that when we listen to music that we do not like, it's not going to have that positive effect. And I think everyone's had that experience, right, where you're listening to music that you don't like. It's not helping you feel calm. It's not reducing your stress. If anything, it's going to elevate it and make you feel more on edge, because you're like, please stop that, right?
So does listening to music you don't like actually make your performance worse, or does it just not do anything for you and you're back to net zero?
If you were listening to music that you really didn't like and it was affecting your mood, then I would anticipate that it would have a negative impact on the activity that you are doing.
Okay.
Because our mood is a huge predictor of how well we do at something, right? So the more elevated our mood, generally the better we do at something. And the more that we're not in a good mood, we're feeling stressed, then we're just not going to be as focused and on the task.
So if listening to music that you like will make you perform better, I have to believe that musicians must be the most high performing people in the world.
Right. Well, if they're performing music that they like.
Sure. But you're now doing something to make the thing that's making you feel better. It's a cycle. They have to be at the peak of their performance all the time.
Yeah.
It's amazing. There's a study right there. Are musicians the most high performing people on the planet? There's $1 million in there for someone, but it won't be me. So, so even within this though, all right, so let's say you like classic rock, or let's say you like classical, or you like jazz or whatever, and it's working for you. Do we know, is there any science that says that elements within that work even better? So the speed or a pounding beat or lyrics or even a key change or minor or major, all those things, any of those matter?
Yes, yes, absolutely. One of the big aspects around in regards to, again, like lowering stress and being focused is the predictability. So when we're listening to a piece of music that not only do we like, but we're familiar with, so maybe it's the first time you hear a song, but you're like, I really like this song. But it has a lot of predictable elements. So it's written in the same way as music that you're used to. So it has similar key changes that you're used to. It has a similar kind of intro and then a chorus and verses and then chorus and verses. So you can predict what's going to come next. And again, that goes back to stimulating the reward system. When we can predict something and that prediction comes through, we have this little reward happen in our brain and we have this release of dopamine. And dopamine is a hormone that is largely known as being this happy hormone and elevating our mood. So predictability is definitely a large component in the enjoyment of a piece of music. And the other is in regards to rhythm or the tempo. So if the tempo, so going back to the surgery, the music they used was of a moderate tempo, they said, for during the surgery, and they used a slower tempo. They had the Beatles of Hey Jude and Let It Be for when they were doing the stitches. And so I had mentioned earlier how music also connects with the motor cortex, and so it makes us want to move. And what it makes us want to move to is that beat. So if we're performing something that requires a slower movement, and the music we're listening to is trying to make us move faster, then we're going to be at cross purposes.
As you're talking about this, I don't know why, but the image that keeps coming into my head is Michael Scott trying to do CPR on the mannequin in The Office to the wrong music. That scene just popped. Instead of Staying Alive, it was I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor. Go look up the scene if you haven't seen it on YouTube. But this can also then, if listening to this music, we know that this will pump us up. We also know, because many of us have tried to do this before to calm ourselves down, it can have the opposite effect. If you listen to something very calming, I guess it's the exact same part of your brain. It's just doing the opposite, having the opposite impact on you.
Yes. So you can, so if we need to move more quickly, like if we're doing exercising, for example, and we want to increase our heart rate, we're going to listen to something with a higher tempo that's in, that's meets that range of heart rate that we want to have. And if we're doing something where we want to calm, like you're doing a meditation, for example, and the breathing you're doing is like a 1, 2, 3 in and a 1, 2, 3, 4 out, for example, then of course the music should align with that same tempo. So then it acts as like a conductor for us, right? It's a conductor for our autonomic nervous system. It's saying, okay, slow down or speed up. It's giving us that, our body, that direction. And we don't even have to think about it.
But if we're getting the dopamine hit from something that we like, that allows, that causes us to feel good and perk up and come to life, what if the music is slow and relaxing, but also something we really like? Wouldn't we get the same dopamine hit and crank ourselves up by accident?
Oh, I see. So you can feel happy without feeling like you want to go run a marathon, right? So you can.
I always feel happier when I'm not, to be honest.
But you could definitely be doing that meditation and listening to something that is releasing that dopamine, releasing that feel-good hormone, and so you're in that happy place, but without feeling pumped up, right? Because the tempo is in line with that slower breathing, slowing the heart rate, in that relaxed state. So you're relaxed, but you're content. You're feeling good. So you can feel good and be like, okay, let's go. I'm ready to conquer the world. Let's do this thing. But you can also feel good, like I'm in a good place and self-reflect and engage in that meditation. So dopamine and that happiness can happen in that high fast tempo or in a low tempo and have just those different effects.
One thing that's unique about music and hearing and this kind of thing is if I eat something that I think is totally delicious, 5 hours later, I can remember sort of that it tasted good, but I don't have the recall that I can replicate that flavor in my mouth by itself. But if I hear a song, 5 hours later, I can still have that tune in my head. Does that mean that this is working a different part of our brain than the other senses?
Yeah. So here I'm going to ask you a question. Music.
Yes.
So if we were to think about where does music get processed in the brain? What is being activated? You have kind of like a first thought, like where is music? Where is that one part?
Geographically, where in my brain?
Yeah.
By my ears, I would think.
Right? However, music is processed in every part of our brain. Music is the only activity that we engage in as humans that lights up every part of our brain.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's lighting up the memories, the limbic system, the emotions, the motor cortex, the audio, everything's going. And because of that, that is why we can connect all of these dots to help us recall a memory, recall an emotion, recall the lyrics of the song, the words, where were we at the time? That's another reason why it's so powerful when working with an individual with dementia.
Or a stroke or something else, because you can tap into a part of their brain that isn't destroyed.
That's still healthy, absolutely.
Wow.
Because those healthy areas of the brain can still connect to music in some way, despite another area of the brain being damaged.
We got to run, but I got to ask, when you're talking about this and we're, you know, as you're explaining it, and again, I think everybody listening has experienced this to some degree or another, not necessarily the stroke or dementia part, clearly, but the other things that they've, you know, that it's affected them in some way. Do we use this enough to our advantage?
Right. We definitely could tap into it so much more. And I think we really need to. Just the fact in schools, for example, we are not using it as a means to teach our children. Like, we teach them the alphabet through a song, but after that, we don't use so much singing or anything. And meanwhile, it's a great way to learn and to remember and to then recall. So learning through song is so important, and we're not doing that really so much anymore. There's so many aspects that we need to bring back for health, for well-being, for managing our stress, taking a time out. It's, again, because our autonomic nervous system responds just in the moment, it's a relatively quote-unquote easy way to bring ourselves into a healthy state. So yeah, we need to do a lot more of that.
My first thought as you're describing this, I mean, I'm thinking if I'm a teacher in a classroom, to play something that's really upbeat and that everybody likes every half hour just to break up the class, just if it can have this impact, you know, rather than sitting there forever and just, I don't know, it seems like the possibilities here are endless for things
to
do that you could use this in work or school or whatever.
Yes, absolutely.
It is a fascinating topic. And as I say, I don't know that the next time you or me or anyone else goes in for surgery, we can expect our doctor to be cranking to Back in Black, but we should probably ask them to, because according to this study, they would do better at what they're doing and we'd be out of there faster and less time under and more recovery time and all the rest. It seems like a win-win for everyone. Rachel Finnerty, great job. Really appreciate you taking the time to do this today.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Scott Radley Show, weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.